We're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, if somebody wants to find the page number there. we'll just jump right into it here. So Hebrews 11 is sometimes called the Hall of Faith, right? And so it's all these kind of synopsis of the great stories of like the Hebrew scriptures. It says like, by faith, so-and-so did something, and sometimes God called that righteousness, credited them as righteousness for that. So like, talks about Abel, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Rahab, Samuel, the prophets, the Israelites, all these people acted in faith, and God appreciated that. And then we're going to go into, right at the end of chapter 11, we're going to start in verse 39 here. So these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So, you guys are chatty today, but I do want to give a couple minutes to ask what sticks out to you. What do you see in this passage? I know we just did this, but yes, Joe. Yeah, so Joe's saying, if you didn't hear, it's encouraging. It's not like guilt and shame like a lot of us had maybe been preached at before from this passage, but it's, these people did this, you can do it too. Don't give up.
Believe in the Lord.
Yep, believe in the Lord, don't give up. Yeah, so have faith in things that we may not ever see. How do we hold on to things that we don't see in our life? Yeah, Chris? Yeah, I'm not going to repeat that because I don't want you guys to feel like Chris made my point for me. Okay, so I do want to give you a little bit of background on me and my relationship with this passage. So back when I was like 15, so you know, this is decades ago, I knew everything, right? Like I had my systematic theology figured out. I knew what religion, I knew how it worked and what the right beliefs were. I pretty much had politics figured out and just like needed people to be a little smarter and get in line with the right answers, right? Like, so I had that all figured out. And so where I wanted to go with that is atonement theories, right? I figured if you're gonna be an amateur theologian, you should start in Hebrews. One of the simplest books in the Bible, and then definitely talk about atonement theories, and I'll try to quote Revelation later. So, does anybody know what an atonement theory is? Yeah, it explains how the cross worked and like what the mechanism was that actually happened on Jesus' death and resurrection. So there's a bunch of them, actually. You know, I'm just going to name some: ransom, moral influence, Christus Victor, recapitulation, satisfaction. I don't even know what some of those are. The correct one, as for 15-year-old me, is penal substitutionary atonement. So in a nutshell, the good news, the gospel, is that we're all bad. God is kind of pissed at us. Righteously, it's righteous anger, right? And so Jesus kind of said, fine, I'll go deal with this. And he served our prison sentence for us. And so now God can kind of stand to be around us. And we all live happily ever after, right? So that is obviously a negative caricature of that theory, and there's actually good. I'm sure, a much better representation that somebody could give you on the penal substitutionary atonement theory, but it's that caricature is fairly accurate of how I understood it as a 15-year-old. So then, I guess move forward a couple years to when I'm in college, and I think that's when this verse stuck out for me. I think that's verse 3 or 4 there. For the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross. And this is kind of what Chris was saying. Like, what is this joy doing here? Like, who's happy about this arrangement that I just said, right? Like, God is, he doesn't really like me. He just, they worked out a fake switcheroo of sorts where God can look and see Jesus instead of me, right? And so that makes God willing to hang out with me. But if God's just seeing Jesus, I'm kind of not necessary in that arrangement, right? And so I guess Jesus is happy that I'm not going to hell, and you know I am too. So we're happy about that. But it just like if they're excited about this, it just seems like if that's the answer, there was an easier way for God to get there. He could have just made people that didn't need to go to hell, right? And then also in verse 40, God had planned something better. So God's actually like excited about something. There's in the post-cross world, there is something that Jesus is looking forward to, and he looks at this and says, I am excited to go do this. We've got something better planned. So what is that? I had always thought that the Garden of Eden was like plan A, that things were supposed to be, we were supposed to live in this perfect world. And then there was like Noah and Moses and Abraham and all these other plans that didn't quite work. And so like the cross was like the last resort. I think where I've come to land is that the cross was always the goal, that may have been the only way for God to make the creation that he actually wanted to interact with. So I want to cover a few background ideas here, and then we'll circle back to this question of what is this joy that Jesus is so interested in, and hopefully these all relate. They did to me. So we live on a real planet. In Genesis, you know, mankind is created, and God says, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth, and subdue it. Now, subdue is different than consume, so we're not just supposed to consume the world, but we're supposed to subdue it. Subdue would be to manage, to govern. You have to understand it, to care for it. You're a steward, you have to tend to it. So even in the garden before the fall, the garden needed to be tended. You couldn't just let it grow or it would become this wild thing that was not as good as it could have been. So the people, even in the perfect world, they had work to do that was meaningful. Jesus also wants us to love life. So he says in John 17, I'm coming to you now, I say these things while I'm still in the world, so that they may have the full measure of my joy within them. So Jesus wants us to have his joy within us. He wants us to enjoy life. John 10, this is pretty commonly used, right? I've come that they may have life and have it to the full, or have it abundantly. In John 6, he's having a conversation with Peter, and when everybody else is leaving him, and Peter says, Jesus asks Peter, are you going to leave me too? He says, where else would we go? You have the words of life. Your words give us life. Okay, so next theme that I want to sprint through here is there's more when we're ready. I found a string of verses where the idea of I want to say more, but you guys can't handle it yet. So this is Jesus saying, I have much more to say, more than you can now bear. Other verses, 1 Corinthians, Paul tells the Corinthian church in chapter 3, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit. Goes on to say, for you were not ready for it. Indeed, you're still not ready. And then back into Hebrews, where we started in chapter 5, author of Hebrew says, we have much more to say about this, but it's hard to make it clear to you. So I think that throughout history, God has challenged his people, his church, to to be more than what they were at whatever point in time, whatever point in history. He's always pushing them to be more. He's always got more to say than what they're ready. So he gives them what they're ready to hear and pushes them to the next thing. So I think even Jesus came at the right time for the push, for the things that he had to say, for that push to society, to the upside down kingdom and some of the things that he talked about. He's pushing them on to the next thing. And he even says, you're not ready for everything I have to say. So it's 2,000 years later. Are we ready for more? Are we ready to hear the next thing that God wants to talk to us about? So go to the next thing. So this is a common theme in this church, right? God is making all things new. So this is 2 Corinthians 5. If anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. Skip a little bit. He has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. And then I got to throw in Revelation here, right? The quote was too long to put in here, but it's a new heaven and a new earth come down. God's going to live with his people and wipe away every tear. It's new creation that God is taking the creation, not destroying it, but just making it new. Okay. So, one other thing I wanted to point out on that slide. To me, there's nothing in here to indicate that God is mad at us, right? Like he wants to make things new, and he wants us to join him as his ambassador. Like that doesn't imply to me that he's frustrated with us and how much we screw things up. So, with all those things in mind, what does all this have to do with joy that Jesus was approaching the cross and thinking, I'm going to go down to earth and live and get tortured, and that sounds great. I'm going to open it up one more time. Like, who has an idea? Who thinks they know where I'm going with this? Nobody? Good, I've totally lost y'all. Okay. So for me, the answer is Jesus is excited about the redemption of all things. I think that there's something about a redeemed person, a redeemed society, that is not attainable without going through the redemption. You can't just make a person who is perfect and has never screwed anything up and have that person be what we have the capability of becoming. As humans, I think that what we grow into, what we become, is better than what we would have been if we never made any mistakes. What we can become is better than what we would be if we were made perfect. So I want to talk through, maybe give a couple examples of that. Anybody ever met sure none of you parent like this, but a kid who is never allowed to make any mistakes, like their parents are right there solving all of their problems and nothing ever goes wrong for this kid. Anybody know these kids? What kind of adults do those kids make? Are they like your favorite people to hang out with when they turn into adults, right? No, they're a train wreck because they've never had to live. They've always had everything handed to them, right? Who in this room thinks they're the same person they were 10 years ago, to make another example, right? And if you think through that 10 years ago, like, what changed you? What is it that turned you into what you are today? And probably there's some hardship built into that. I'm sure there's some fantastic things that happened too, but most of us have been through some pain in the last 10 years, and that was formational for us. And helped us become the person we are today. And do you like yourself better today than you did 10 years ago? Like, would you rather hang out with you today or you 10 years ago? Maybe some of you are just wishing for the glory days. I like myself a little bit better now than when I was than when I knew everything. So I'm going to give you my church example as one other point here. The church that I grew up in, I actually got pretty much kicked out of because of wrong doctrine that I had, where I, you know, this passage kind of got me, was one of the first things that didn't quite fit right in for me, where I went with Jesus' joy wasn't super controversial, but it wasn't the last question that I asked, it wasn't the last piece of scripture that I poked at, and eventually kind of got me in trouble there, right? So that was a really difficult experience for us, and it was very formational for me and for how I view the world, right? To go through being rejected by a body, right? So for me, it kind of opened my eyes that could even happen. Like, I didn't know that, it had never occurred to me that churches could be like that, right? And probably a lot of us in here have had that experience on one level or another. But then after going through that and processing it and healing from that, coming into forming this church, that experience and some, you know, other people's experience really helped shape one of our directives, that this generous orthodoxy idea comes out of. If people are engaging with the scripture and with the spirit and seeking out what God wants for them, and they're excited about what they think God is telling them, they shouldn't have to feel excluded for that, even if they disagree with the body, with most of us, right? Like, we all know that, right? Like, that's core to this church. But part of that, one of the reasons that was so important to be core to this church, is because of the experiences that we had had, and we wouldn't have known to focus on that if we hadn't been through all that. So, could God have just made a perfect world? Could he have just made a perfect world with no problems? Yeah, he probably could have done that. In fact, maybe that is actually the arrangement that he had with the angels and stuff before the fall. But he wanted something different. He wanted something that is maybe better. I think Jesus wanted something better. He wanted real people doing real things that matter, people that will try, and they will fail, and they will get up and try again, and they will grow, and over time become more and more their true selves. And it's that true self that I think Jesus is so excited about. I believe that nothing gives God greater joy than hanging out with his kids, with his children, with us, as we continuously become the best versions of ourselves. God thinks that you are fun. He thinks that you are interesting. He thinks you're amazing. He's excited to be around you. God really likes you. And every day, you get a little bit cooler, and he likes you a little bit more, right? Yep. And I don't think that the person that you're becoming could exist without the life that you've been through, without the experiences that you have had, that the person that you're becoming just couldn't exist with the snap of a finger. And I think this is true on an individual level, but also as a community, as a church community, or even governmental city community, or national or globally, that God has a relationship with all of those entities, that, like, you know, God is bigger than us, and he has personal relationships with you, but I think he also interacts with with humanity as a whole, and has a relationship there, and that relationship is growing over time too. So I don't think that he interacts with humanity in quite the same way that he did 4,000 years ago. So let me ask, you know, it's been, well, this will be a rhetorical question, just to be clear, but is humanity different than it was 2,000 years ago, or 4,000 years ago, or even 100 years ago? Like, is it better or worse? Some people, depending on your point of view, would argue that humanity's worse, and they'd probably poke at things like, well, we've lost all morality in today's world or whatever. Maybe that's true, but if you're a minority, or you have a disability, or you're LGBT, or you're a woman, right? Like, is today better than 100 years ago? Yeah, right? Like, I was thinking of like the Me Too movement, and there's all sorts of politics, and some of you probably think it's the Me Too's a bunch of junk, but like the idea that's supposed to be behind it is that it's not okay to treat women like they're property for men to use, right? Like, that is not okay, and I'm glad that my daughters are growing up in a world where that's starting to be considered not okay. So, there's a lot of problems in the world, right? Lots of problems. It's important on your first sermon to jump into the big problems. So, some of these things we can fairly easily attribute to sin. Like, this problem exists as a result of man's brokenness. So if you think of slavery or racism, poverty in some instances, like these are somebody in power has manipulated the system and caused suffering for somebody else. There are other problems that that doesn't play quite as well with, like it hit the Indonesian tsunami, Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004, that where 230,000 people died. That was a difficult thing for me to process. It's also really important to cover terrible natural disasters, right? So why would God let something like that happen? Why didn't he fix it? Couldn't God just solve all these problems? And this kind of, we've talked about this, and I think, God probably could have solved that problem, but then like, where does he stop? You know, how big does the natural disaster have to be before God intervenes? And what is the role of humanity in reacting to these kinds of things? He did give us this world to subdue it, right? So I think if God were to solve all of our problems, it actually creates a couple more problems that I think are bigger issues in the long view of humanity. Maybe it makes our particular life better, but over time, one of the problems is that nothing I do would really matter. If God was just going to solve everything, like, what's the point? Why do I go to work in the morning? Why do I care about any of this stuff? Because God's just going to fix it, right? And again, how big does the problem have to be then before God decides it's time for him to intervene and make it go away? And another issue is, I think humans are inherently creative beings, and if this world has nothing wrong with it, what are we supposed to create? There are some of you who are great artists, musicians, and you have all these paths for creativity just to make things that are beautiful, and that's fantastic. I'm glad that you have the opportunity to do that. For me, and probably a lot of us, my creative outlet is problem solving. I see something that's wrong with what I'm doing at work, and I want to fix it. Something breaks at my house, I want to fix it. I got to come up with, how do I create a thing that fits in here and connects these pieces? Like, problem solving is how I'm creative. And I think a lot of humanity, that is creativity, and we need these problems to spur us on to become the humanity that we can become. Does anybody know what the DART 2 system is? See, zero hands. I forget actually what the acronym stands for, but this is the series of sensors and monitoring equipment that we have deployed in the Pacific Ocean that it's, you know, they got a thing sitting at the bottom of the ocean, and it detects the pressure, the height of a water column. And after an earthquake, we send out a warning to people in Seattle or Alaska or Hawaii or California, say there's a possible tsunami. And then we monitor what the water column height does, and they can detect if it changes a foot or two or something like that. And we go, you know, fast warning is important for tsunamis, so we go modify the warning accordingly. And the system is not perfect, and they actually put big upgrades into the Pacific Ocean system after the Indonesian tsunami. But we essentially know how to prevent massive loss of life due to tsunamis in today's world. We have the technology, we have the capability. It's just a matter of, do we want to spend the money and put the infrastructure in place? So this is a problem that, for on a large scale, humanity knows what to do with. So it required ingenuity, it required human creativity, and it requires the will to act. But you could almost ask, if we knew how to do this, why did we let the Indian Ocean tsunami happen? Like, it's not, I can't just blame God when we also have the answer. So I believe that, like a good parent who doesn't over-parent their children, God cannot just solve all our problems. The world is growing up. It's becoming a better place to live. We're always going to have new problems. I think, maybe not always, but there's certainly plenty of problems today, and we're probably going to continue to have new problems. But we've made so much progress over the thousands of years, right? So all these things that we do as humans, they provide meaning to us, to those around us. Our lives matter, our choices matter, our relationships, our jobs, our vocations, our politics. We live in all that matters, and we live in a real world. And all of your life has the potential to contribute to the redemption of all things. That is what Jesus is about. Could a redeemed creation be better than a perfect creation? For me, it's a resounding yes. I believe that as the gospel. I think the world is becoming better than perfect. Our lives and our actions, they mean something here. And, I mean, honestly, this world can be a pretty nice place to live in, to enjoy while we're going about this business, too. I think this is Jesus' joy, when his creation, every act of redemption brings him great joy. And when he thought about the cross and they planned this world out, there was no other way to get where he wanted to be, with redeemed people being their true selves in a redeemed society. There's no other way to get there than to go through the mess. So Jesus points out, when he's here teaching, there's a new way of life. His words lead to life, right? Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount. We've called it the upside down kingdom before, that your systems as people don't work, and you need to change them. You need to be unselfish. You need to not seek power. You need to serve others. And he says, I'm making all things new. I'm redeeming all things. Will you be my ambassador? Do you want to be part of what I'm doing? Will you help me? Will you ask others to help me? So, will you join Jesus to make a better world? A better Peoria? Will you help him make a better Peoria? Will you help him make a better you? He's not mad at you. He doesn't need you to be perfect. But he wants to help you. He wants to help you redeem whatever situations you're in, whatever you're struggling with. He wants to help you redeem that. And he wants you to help him redeem the things around you. I believe that God has blessed us with great influence. We've got a lot of power in the people we interact with and in the world. I think it is within our power today is within your power today to look a cashier in the eye when you're buying something and ask for real, like, how's your day going? How are you? To be kind to people around you. It is within our power as a society to provide clean water to everybody who does not have clean water to drink. That is something we know how to do. It is within your power to seek to understand others, to not judge them, but to ask questions and try to figure out, where are you coming from? At your job, you have the ability to make your company better, a better place to work, where people are included and accepted. You can do that in your work group. You can make your work group a better place to work. And you can make a better product that you can. It's okay to consider it spiritual, to put some of your energy into making a better product that people are going to use to make their lives better. One of the things that Caterpillar does in their marketing, and I work at Cat, one of their marketing things is that we make the products that people use to make a better world, or we make progress possible. And a lot of that's corporate propaganda, but there's some truth in it, right? Like, I'm working on a genset project that's going to go into places that don't have electricity, and communities are going to have reliable electricity, and the better I make that, the better their experience will be. Also, the more money that the corporation will make, but... You have the capacity to ask for forgiveness for those that you've hurt. You have the capacity to forgive, to seek reconciliation. I don't know who that needs to be, like who you need to forgive. Most of us have somebody that we're upset with on some level or another. Maybe it's a friend, or you don't like your boss, you don't like your coworker. Maybe it's your spouse that you need to ask how do we work on reconciliation with. But you have the capacity to go about that. As a society, we have the capacity to give women the same opportunities that I've had. It shouldn't be more difficult to get a good job if you're a woman. And I think every day it's less and less. But we have the capacity to do that. Same thing for minorities. We have if we have the will to do it, we don't want to, like, I don't think you need to take all white males' privilege away necessarily, but how do we provide that same privilege to everybody else? You have the capacity to volunteer somewhere, whatever it is that you're passionate about. Midwest Food Bank, District 150, I'm sure needs tutors. There are lots of things. Foster care initiatives. You can get involved with all that. The church has the capacity to care for the most vulnerable children when their parents aren't able to do it for them, right? Some of you are doing that. You can step in and do that. So there's some pretty big problems out there in the world today. Globally, there's refugees all over the place. We have problems nationally with people needing jobs and unemployment and whatever our problems are here, racism, you name it. Locally, we have problems. Peoria's got its own issues. Personally, you have issues that you're dealing with. You've got problems, right? Some of these issues just require, to solve them, they just require the will to act. They require people to be unselfish, to think about others, to be kind, to care for others. Others, the solutions are really difficult, and they're going to stretch the limits of human creativity. I don't know what in all this resonates with you, but I hope you take some time to think about it and ask, what is God asking you to redeem? What are you going to strive this week to improve? What are you going to try to redeem this week? There's big issues out there for you and for humanity, and God cannot wait to see how we respond to them, to see what we become, what humanity becomes, what you become. There's so much joy yet for us to obtain, and I believe that God is right there, holding our hands, guiding us, encouraging us. God is redeeming all things, and do you want to be part of that? Nothing would give him greater joy.